Game Cola faithful, and welcome to the Game Cola podcast. This is podcast number 199. The hundreds are at the end of the line. We will talk more about that later. But for now, I am your host and podcast commander, Joseph Martin, joined by...
I'm Blue Rider, and I'm less than 200 years old.
I'm James Pelster, and I'm reaching the end of this arc, ready to start the next.
It can't be the end of the arc, though, because this arc would not be very long. There's been multiple arcs during the 100s. The whole London arc happened during the 100s.
Oh, true.
The London arc is when we introduced Blue as a new character on the show.
That's true.
Right? That was a bit before that.
I think I'm just not good at coming up with a joke to go along with the intro bit.
No, I wouldn't say that. Now you're making me feel bad. I'm just yes and.
How am I making you feel bad? It's self-deprecating against me, myself.
Right, but because I feel bad because I have caused you to self-deprecate.
No, you're fine.
So, in fact, that's actually a worse offense than anything you've ever said on the podcast, James. I can't believe you've done this on this, our honorable 199th episode, which will not maintain any prestige in the annals of Game Cola history, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, I guess this just means I'm starting my villain arc. See, I was right.
But guys, I think it's time to talk about the most important video game that we could possibly talk about. A very recent development.
Expedition 33?
Well, you've got one of the numbers right.
Yes, number Expedition.
Cat President Third Rate Candidate is out on Steam. You can buy it.
Yeah.
It is very important to me that you buy this video game. I will not explain why. I mean, yes, generally, Paul Franzen, former creator, founder, and editor-in-chief of GameCola.net, along with Michael Gray, former staff writer and editor, I think, longtime GameCola people, made the game. So always, supporting that. But
it will be the best game you've ever played for no particular reason at all. I have no bias in the matter.
Yeah, me either, Blue Rider. What is Cat President Third Rate Candidate? It is a video game where cats are the only people allowed to be, I don't know. This is one of those, is it people or is people only humans? Is there a different distinction? Who cares? The cats are the only ones who can run for president. There's six of them, and they all run for president, and they all have a romance story. And it's very funny. If you are at all a fan of Game Cola's humor, it is etched deeply into the fabric of this video game. I think you should give it a shot and a chance. And if I can get Paul to get on the podcast soon, I will make him talk about it to us. I will force him. But I guess we can talk about other video games if we really must.
We can.
I was going to say, I haven't gotten around to playing Cat President 3, so unfortunately I'm a bit out of the loop.
No, I haven't yet. I do want... It came out on Wednesday, and a weekend has not happened since that Wednesday. Yeah. So I have not had time to play it myself. But I have it on good authority that there are definitely some good things to see in that video game.
Like cats.
Like cats.
I was planning on, playing through, a little marathon of, a bunch of their games, and then I tried to start with Life in the Dorms, and my PC has been out of commission for a while, and so it is in for repairs. Well, it's in for, they said in about a week, they'll start looking at it to see what the problem is, and then see if they can start fixing it. So that's fun. So I have been using my Steam Deck a lot, and that game doesn't work on Steam Deck, apparently. I thought it would be safe because I thought the one big bug in it that they can't fix is that you need a controller, and I was like, my Steam Deck is the controller. But apparently it doesn't work quite that way, so I have to wait for my PC to get back. Hopefully.
Yeah, it's Xbox Live Arcade which I believe is what Life in the Dorms was first released on.
I believe so, yeah.
Is kind of an interesting... It's an interesting spot in the history of video games, especially when we talk about what the kids these days refer to as slop, right? Cheaply made video games or content in general. Though back in those days, it was not computer-generated slop. It was heartfelt, earnest, terrible games that Life in the Dorms, a good video game, had to share space with. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that it was such a specific thing. And it felt big at the time, Xbox Live indie games, right? Like, it was kind of a big touchstone, at least for us, when we were talking about games. But yeah, it's kind of just not it itself, though the game, not again with Life in the Dorms as an example, not necessarily every game is no longer a part of that, a part of the cultural consciousness, but the service itself, I would be surprised if anyone 10 years younger than me even knew about it. And not as like a, oh, well, back in my day, I mean, as a, this felt really important at the time and it turned out not to be. James, did you ever play an Xbox Live indie game? I didn't have an Xbox.
I did not have an Xbox growing up. I know that, like, I do agree that it was definitely, like, a big, like, point of discussion. Like, I listened back to all different eras of Game Cola podcast since I drive to and from work very frequently, pretty much, well, every day, even. So I listen to a lot of Game Cola podcast, and that is definitely a big discussion there, because that was, I think, why Jetty, when he was making his first games, he was using the XNA framework, is because that was the framework primarily used for making Xbox Live indie games. And it just so happened you could also make them for PC at the same time.
Yeah, it was just... I don't remember exactly why it was a storefront, basically, hosted by Xbox. And I think the XNA framework was sort of like the way that you made the video games. I feel like what really filled this niche were platforms like Roblox, where you made the video game within those confines. I feel like that is the modern equivalent, actually. I think in terms of how people talked about the games, they might be more similar to like random AI generated video games on Steam. But in terms of the actual creative process and the results of it, I think those kinds of people making those kinds of games, but like, you know, a generation shifted in age, right? People with those kinds of personality matrices and tendencies and desires would be on a platform like Roblox. But I'm welcome to people saying otherwise, because there's definitely with Roblox, there's like a social component to it, for better or potentially for significantly worse, that I don't think Xbox Live indie games had. It was more of directly just like a storefront. Mm-hmm. Xbox has been in the news recently. Have you guys heard about it?
I think so.
Well, they gave up, yeah.
The leadership
They gave up.
No.
I mean, some people are suggesting.
Well, people are saying Sony's given up.
I think a lot of people are concerned that these big dogs in video games are giving up in various ways.
Yeah.
Blue, what we did you have a specific thing you think they were giving up on, or are you just is this a bit?
I forget what it was that people were saying that for, but there's also the Sony half where PlayStation is moving away from doing all their single player big games on PC.
So did that get officially confirmed? Because there was like a day or two where people were like, I'm not officially confirming it, but wait until tomorrow, I feel like. So maybe they did officially confirm it. I was trying to look it up before the podcast, and I feel like I was getting articles from like a day or two ago saying like, there's rumblings and grumblings. The thing I did get more information was that the CEO of Xbox, I don't know if that's how you say it, but the guy in charge of Xbox, but not in charge of Microsoft, right? Because it's like a subsidiary company. You could still be the CEO of the subsidiary because business. He is stepping down slash retiring. Some people speculate pushed out, but it does kind of, I don't really know. It seems like maybe it's just best to consider it an expected retirement because that's the information that we're going to get. And anything more than that just feels like speculation. But instead of the person that they expected to succeed him, they have a new person, Asha Sharma, who previously worked on making, to my understanding, making AI LLM integrations into Microsoft, other Microsoft products not related to Xbox. Of course, you, as expected, gamers are very normal about this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Very normal.
I mean, discourse around video games tends to be, you know, pretty calm, reserved.
Pretty calm, collected. And of course, you never run into my least favorite situation where you have some legitimate, well-founded concerns, but have to spend all of your time being like, okay, but I'm not like those people. Not like those people who are mad. I'm not mad like those people, right? Who are like, well, is she a real gamer? A real hashtag gamer? How many gamer points do you have? I can't even remember. I'm not even a real gamer. I can't even remember what the achievement points are called in Xbox anymore.
It's such a silly question, but also I feel like it does embody a genuine, like you said, a genuine actual concern, just worded and expressed in the wrong way. And I feel like that's just a broad concern with all of, like, I feel like this is just a concern that could be applied to, like, broad industry leadership in any category or market, which is, do the people making decisions actually have a genuine, long-time vested interest in the thing that they are producing or creating or leading? Or do they just have a vested interest in running a business and making money? Because generally speaking, if you only have the latter and not the former, it's not usually a recipe for anything good for the people who actually use the product or consume the media or anything else.
Yeah, and also, though, like, there are plenty of examples where, right, like, they're just less interesting because we don't hear about them when it does well. But, like, I'm sure that there are plenty of executives who got into the video game space, didn't really have much experience, but know how to run a business and know how to delegate, right, to the people who are, like, you say, okay, like, I don't have the passion, but I know the people who do have the passion and I know how to delegate responsibilities so that they can use that while I focus on things like business operations that are more standard between companies.
And there's something to be said for that. That is true, that, like, at the end of the day, if you can't keep the business afloat and functioning, then it doesn't really matter. So that there is some truth to that.
But I also think that the fact that AI, LLM, AI, like, they just say AI, right? And, you know, I work in computer
machine
science.
Learning.
I work in robotics.
We need to call it machine learning.
Well, no, it's not even, machine learning isn't even specific enough. There's lots of types of machine learning. This is like if you really want to narrow down on it, is like transformer-based large language model architectures.
Yeah.
But you can't say that every time. So I'm going to do, I hate doing it. Understand that I hate doing this myself, right? Because again, this is my job. I work in robotics. I'm going to call it AI because that's what they call it and it's short, but know that I'm dying a little inside every time I do. The things that she and by extension her team have said about AI, I do think have legitimate cause for concern because they're like, oh, well, we're not going to make AI slop. We're going to make good things. We're going to make fully AI products that are going to be good. But, like, that's the space that they're leaving open, right? It's like no one who makes AI stuff is saying, and I'm intentionally making it bad, right? Like, it's going to be bad, guys. It's going to be slop. Aren't you excited? Right? So just saying, oh, it's going to be good, don't worry. It's like that's what everybody says, right? So, like, that doesn't give me any confidence. right? It doesn't give me the confidence that you understand, like, navigating the differences, right? People, like, there's, like, general anti-AI sentiment in the space, but also, like, if you're going to mess around with this stuff, you have to understand, like, the difference. Like, there's different groups of people that dislike it for different reasons, and you have to, like, navigate that, right? Because someone who, like, makes digital art, like, hand-drawn, like, on a tablet, digital art, or feel, like, and then maybe someone who it works in a software job and their bosses are like, you have to use AI for everything. This is a mandate. Like, these two people are going to have very different, they may both say we don't like LLMs, but they have very, or like generative AI, but they have very different opinions and problems with it that I don't know. I just, the way that things are being talked about does not seem like the current, what do you call it?
Culture?
Not advertisement, public relations, the public relations apparatus of this system does not seem to be dealing with well. And also, they're not really saying anything else. Like, I tried to look at a lot of interviews to make sure that I wasn't just reading people who were mad about things, but she and her team are not saying anything concrete about what they're going to do, it feels like. The most I could get was, we're not abandoning hardware and keep an eye out for the next thing of hardware, which is like, we've already been talking about the Xbox 11, Series 11 or whatever for at least a year. I went back and looked a year ago, and that was, we literally, there's a bullet point on the podcast that says the PlayStation 6 and the Xbox Series 11.
Why is it Series 11?
It was a goof about how the naming convention is dumb, right? Because X, after X comes 11.
Oh, 11, yeah, okay.
I mean, it worked. I carried the joke better.
Yeah, and the other episode. Thing...
James,
yeah,
I'm telling you about a joke that happened a year ago. Don't come at me so hard here.
I also wanted to mention that I think the other surprise is that I believe the person that we expected to replace Phil Spencer at Xbox, I don't remember their name, but I believe it was a she, she was behind the sort of the campaign of this is an Xbox, of sort of these Xbox branded other gaming devices. Like, they made, like, you know, I want to say it was like a Logitech handheld, basically a competitor to the Steam Deck, which was officially Xbox branded. And they have this sort of campaign of, yeah, this is an Xbox too. Not only is your home console an Xbox, your PC is an Xbox. This handheld device is an Xbox, because they were trying to do this sort of all-encompassing sentiment of, because Xbox is Microsoft and Microsoft is Windows and Windows is PCs, you can play your Xbox games on PC through things like Game Pass and that sort of thing. And so they were trying to basically spread themselves out. And so people were expecting her to take Phil's place, but I think she left as well. And so that was kind of what the big surprise was, is that they're like, well, now what even is the focus at Xbox now?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like they had a super coherent, like, again, I'm talking more about the public relations, like, media angle of it. Who knows? I don't know what's going on internally.
Yeah, who knows?
You can find someone with every opinion about this person and that person, right, and what's actually happening. Like, you can decide, you can just decide what you think is true and then go find someone who agrees with you, who's been interviewed about this, and be like, yes, that, see, someone said that it's happening. Because I read a lot of interviews, and that was basically the impression that I got.
Yeah.
But I think, regardless, from all of that, there just wasn't a real clear vision presented. And so far, it's basically all been defense, like, responding to people say, well, okay, you got the AI person, so is this going to be, like, a full-on AI thing? And they're like, oh, no, it's not going to be, like, a full-on AI thing. We're still talking about video games and gamers. And it's like, okay, well, are we still doing hardware? And like, oh yeah, we're still doing hardware, but no details about the hardware strategy. And there are a lot of people who appear not to be convinced that hardware is still, right? They're saying, well, we have not yet officially decided publicly that we're going to get out of hardware and just become like a publishing company. Again, I'm not saying that this is what's happening, but
there are people out there
who appear not to be convinced, because Xbox has been expanding their publishing and like not doing exclusives anymore. That appears to be the crux. Maybe there's some more intelligent, not to say that it's stupid, but just like more in-depth intelligent discussion as to why people theorize about that. But it seems like the crux of the argument is like, or the seed is, they're basically releasing everything cross-platform. There are games like first-party Xbox titles that are selling better on the PS5 than on Xbox. Maybe that's why they would want to just move to be publishing. Hardware is hard right now. I mean, even a year ago, we were talking about how the line between a video game console, like gaming optimized hardware that you got out of a gaming console versus a more generalized PC architecture, the boundaries between these two things are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And unless you have a form factor pitch like the Switch does, you're running out of reasons why someone wouldn't just buy a computer versus a video game console. That was a year ago that we were having this conversation.
Yeah. And I really do hope that Xbox continues making hardware, because like now with Sony, like the last, you know, 6 months or year or something has really just been them being like, yeah, we're going to just make all of the bad decisions. We're going to buy up all these studios and then close them down. The people that have made, you know, in some cases, a lot of very, very good games, or we're going to buy, you know, we're going to take Blue Point and force them to make a kind of game that they've never made before and is not their strength. And now that it's not working out, we're going to kill them. And like, so now it seems very clear that it's like, now more than ever, we need competition in this space outside of just like in publishing for sure, but also outside of publishing. Like Sony is clear, like, you know, Sony has been kind of on a high trend for a little while, and now they're kind of on a downturn. And I feel like hopefully Xbox tries to match and like, well, not match, but tries to sort of go on the uptick here to try and sort of make a comeback and, you know, be, you know, hopefully, I don't even know what console generation this is, but for whatever the next console generation is, I would like to see a win for Xbox next console generation, whenever that is, even if it's, you know, even if it's 5 years from now. I did see
some people speculating. The numbers that I saw thrown around were 2027, 2028, and 2029 for both Xbox and PlayStation.
If I had
I've been mentally on a kick of imagining us actually writing articles with words on GameCola.net, the video game website. I feel like a good idea for one is which of the big the title needs to be workshopped, but which of the big three gaming console companies is currently the biggest villain, right? Because I feel like there's almost an argument for all three of Nintendo versus Sony versus Switch versus PlayStation, yeah, like, versus Xbox. Because I don't know how Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo, like in terms of like the overall company structure, I don't know exactly how you frame it. But like you get the idea, right? Like I feel like there's an argument for all, and some of it depends on like what you care about more. I don't know. Do you feel similar? Maybe not necessarily about literally it being a good article, but like that vibe. Do you feel similarly?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat the premise of the article?
Who is the biggest villain of gaming right now? Of those
that
three.
That is... Okay.
Man, right? I feel like we could find someone on GameCola to...
Yeah. Oh, I'm just trying to think about that now.
Because they're all for different reasons. It's not like there's one... I mean, like, I think everybody could kind of agree on things being too expensive. But in terms of, like, what's making headlines, I feel like it's just very different stuff
yeah.
that people are talking about.
Because both... because both Sony and Microsoft, like, the big issue is, like, studio closures and stuff like that. That's, like, one of the biggest, like, headliner issues, which is fortunately an issue that I think Nintendo has not had to deal with at least nearly as much, or if it is, it's not been high profile enough that I've seen it in news.
Alpha Dream is the
like
only
that.
One I can think of. And even then, I'm pretty sure the narrative was that a lot of them got folded into Nintendo proper.
And the fact of the matter is that if you look at Alpha Dream's track record, their sales had been on a downtrend for almost a decade.
Right.
Before they folded.
As opposed to, we worked on this video game, it was super successful, and now we don't exist anymore.
Yeah, like, it's not a Hi-Fi Rush situation. It's a case of, like, Alpha Dream, like, their big headliner games were still the Mario and Luigi games, and those were suffering in their sales ever since Bowser's Inside Story. Every game after Bowser's Inside Story sold less. And their final sort of Hail Mary of attempt of remaking Bowser's Inside Story flopped so hard that we barely even had, that it barely was on sales charts long enough to be tracked in terms of data. It's like, really, it sold terribly. And the fact of the matter is, I was one of the people that bought it. It was not a good remake. It kind of butchered a few elements of the original game, even. And so, like, when you see it that way, it's like, I can understand why that studio closed. Whereas with Microsoft and Xbox, it's like, I think Nintendo also has a much more business, in a business sense, is much more conservative in what they do. As a result, that, like, they're not, like, super big on spending. They're not big spenders.
Maybe in terms of software and stuff outside of the company, but I don't think you could say that about their hardware. I mean, always is
no.
Like, being adventure. I mean, not to say that they don't think it through, but like being their hardware is absolutely where they're the most adventurous.
Absolutely. But it is also, it tends to be on the lower end. Like it tends to, well, there's trade-offs with it. So it's not necessarily that they're trying to be cheap and affordable in the exchange for being low powered. It's also like they want it to be portable, and as a result, it needs to be lower power. It needs to be such and such. So there's a multifaceted reason why their hardware is what it is. But I think that part of it is also they understand that, you know, even to this day, they still stand by the stance of you don't need the most powerful hardware to make good video games. And then, yeah, more broadly in terms of like the studios that they, you know, that they purchase or that they work contract with, as well as even the games they develop. What game was it where they were saying that like the budget for Pokemon, for one of the Pokemon games, I forget if it was Legend ZA or something like that, but they were like, yeah, this game was actually like, this game's budget was so and so, or it was under this amount, and it was actually like really, really low budget for a AAA video game. And when I see that, that makes me like, in some sense, I can respect that. Well, there was some criticism. I think it was Legend ZA, and they were saying like this game costs less than $20 million to produce or something like that. I'm probably completely getting that number wrong. And people were saying, yeah, this game does look a little cheap, you know, especially like with the whole Windows situation on the buildings and all of that. But at the same time, I see that and I go, I can respect
the whole map being one model.
Yeah. Like I can still respect, you know, trying to keep things constrained in that sense, because I think that a lot of the big problems, and I'm not saying that this is the reason for all these studio closures or that it needs to be the reason for all these studio closures. A lot of some, you know, potentially aren't necessary if we maybe just cut a zero off of a couple executives' salaries. But that aside, ballooning budgets are a huge problem everywhere, especially in the games industry. And so, sorry, that's all a very long roundabout way of saying that I have a lot of respect for what Nintendo seems to be doing from an outside perspective, in the sense of how they're sort of running the ship, for the most part, anyway.
I will say, Blue, I do remember them talking, it being talked about, the whole city world map being one model. I do also remember looking into it and people claiming that that was misrepresenting something, that it was like, oh, this is actually like a smaller model from like the map, like a smaller scale map that is this is used for. But also, that is right. They're saying the original people were lying. It could be that the defenders were lying, were making something up because they wanted to. Like, I'm not saying that they're right. I'm just saying that's something worth looking into. It's been a while since I checked in on that.
And also, just because it's one model doesn't mean the entire model geometry is loaded all at once. Like,
there could be. I just say that there could be more to that specifically.
I've talked a lot about this in the Discord, but. That one, I particularly was like, unless the Pokemon devs are like paid 10 times more than the best paid devs in the industry, that one irks me because they made the game cheaply because they knew people would buy it and it didn't have to be good because it was Pokemon and they could just not try. And
is the thing to talk about now, isn't it? Because of what happened today.
I
watched the trailer. James, did you say you watched the trailer?
I did watch the announcement trailer.
Okay. Blue, did you watch the announcement trailer?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Pokemon Winds and Waves?
Yes.
Or Wind and Wave?
Plural for both. Winds and Waves.
Pokemon
Winds and Waves.
What if it was, did they ever actually say it out loud? What if it was Pokemon Wines?
Yes, they did.
What if it was Pokemon Wines and Waves?
Well, then it would be a stupid name, Joe.
I don't think so. Wow.
I'm just saying. Maybe it's just a localization issue.
A localization issue that spread to the actual graphic of the game logo showing a gust of wind.
Maybe it's a wind. Maybe it's not supposed to be wind. Maybe it's supposed to be a winding line that just happens to look like wind. I'm just saying we got to keep an open mind, James.
I will not entertain
this
any further.
Oh, I'm sorry. Should it be an open mind?
No.
Because
you are accelerating my villain arc even faster, Joe.
But winded, winded, minded, mind. There's something there. Okay. I remember my
mind,
thought
mind
was.
Mind isn't a thing.
Shush. My impression, I watched the trailer. I saw it. I was looking at it. And I was like, man, I guess I'm just going to have to. I don't trust my instincts anymore. I was like, I can't tell if the internet is going to like this or not. I don't know. Some parts seemed to look like it looked good. It seemed like they were trying at least to make you think. They were focusing a lot on the environments in a way that I don't feel like they did as much in other trailers. And so...
I agree.
Visually, it seemed like they were at least trying to make the impression that there was more better stuff going on visually than has been the case. And also, the other piece of information to put in here is that this one seems to... I haven't done the math myself and looked at like the teams involved and stuff, because sometimes like how long have they been working on something can kind of vary. Well, like, you know, some people were working on it at the beginning and then there's like, you know, you get everybody on it and to finish it up. But the impression from people talking about it seems to be that this one has had longer to cook than many of the recent Pokemon games. And the hope being that that will be reflected in some way. So that was my impression watching it. But what was your guys' impressions?
It seemed to me like a big mistake. Like,
what?
Someone at either Game Freak or Nintendo or whatever forgot that it's illegal in Japan for them to make a Pokemon game that looks good.
Oh. You had me
you
going
really
there
set us for
a
loop
minute.
On the tone of that one, Blue. Good
I thought
job.
You were about to just throw out some really spicy take, and I was like, "Oh
was
man,
like, oh no, a crime, a video game crime."
Uh oh.
So you liked how it looked?
It did look like they put effort into it in time, and that is good. I wish this had been the formula further back, but I hope that it is the future.
I
also have been hopeful before, and it has been disappointing. So
yeah, I mean, this is just the first trailer, right? Like, I think certainly between me and Blue, I don't know where you factor in on this, James. I am more optimistic about Pokemon than Blue is.
I have not played the last two generations of mainline Pokemon games. The last Pokemon game I played was Sun and Moon, and then I played a little bit of Ultra Moon, and wasn't a big fan. I tried playing Pokemon Sword around when it first came out, and I just kind of did not grab me. My sisters have since convinced me to check that game out more, that it potentially is better than a lot of people give it credit for. In particular, in just the sheer variety of Pokemon that you can find in the world along your adventure and the kinds of teams that you can build because of that Pokemon variety. And so I am potentially going to start playing through that again, give it another shot. But Scarlet and Violet, I know that a lot of people enjoyed what they did with that game, but just from a technical perspective, it was absolute junk. And I still feel like they haven't, like, there. That was a game that very much felt like we were trying to make a Switch 2 game, and then the Switch 2 wasn't going to be ready, and so we had to pivot to making it a Switch 1 game, or like a cross-generational game, and then that just really hurt them. And so what I'm wondering is this new Pokemon game going to be a Switch 2 exclusive, or is it going to again be a cross-generational game? Because I am almost positive that any kind of footage they capture that was in-engine is going to be on Switch 2, just for the sake of making the trailer look as good as it possibly can.
Oh, yeah,
but,
for sure.
But that being
I feel
said,
like I read somewhere that it was a Switch 2 exclusive. Is the
okay,
plan.
Which that is potentially...
Saying, I'm glad that they dropped the Switch.
Yeah, that is, if that's true, then that is potentially a, I would say, possibly a good thing, since at least if they are really, like, being, if the previous game was ambitious enough that it was really hard to put it on base Switch, then I can say that maybe it will be a better product technically, by just being able to target one platform for it. And just based on what I saw, based on how it looks, it seems like it's interesting. And I do like the tropical setting. I was a fan of the setting of Sun and Moon. I was a fan of the previous island-ish setting, which was Hoenn. I don't know. I am interested to see what they do with this setting, because I feel like I would like them to try and differentiate it somewhat from Sun and Moon, because they already have done tropical island setting, but it seems like we're potentially going to be going underwater with this. They made a point of showing sort of an underwater shot, and I think if we brought back diving from Gen 3, from Hoenn, that would be super cool, possibly even expanded on that mechanic. I think that could be really interesting, make these games set apart from any of the others. I mean, obviously it would be reusing a mechanic from past games, but diving was always a
it's
not a huge mechanic from Hoenn.
Well, no, it's not even really that much the same. Like, the diving in Hoenn, and even in the remake that was copying it, is just you press a button and then you're in a different overworld that isn't even mechanically different.
Yeah, so
it's basically a cave. It's identical to it's a cave that you have to you have to unlock the ability to access.
Yeah.
This would be like, yes, there's some fun like continuity and terminology, but like practically speaking, it would be completely different. And the fact that it's called Winds and Waves would make me think that there's maybe a similar, it is a marriage of two kinds of environments that they're trying to add. The most easy to pitch is the underwater one, but I could imagine that like having a similar system for certain areas in the sky, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And that would be like this kind of three-dimensional movement. I could see that being kind of the angle that they go for.
And that would be cool. I also, there was a neat detail that somebody pointed out in the comments of the trailer, which is that when they were showing that sort of the storybook with all of the, you know, showing basically little snapshots of previous games, it was all like, you know, drawn artwork. But for Gen 1, it was all drawn in grayscale, black and white, whereas all of the later, all of the artwork representing later games was in color. And I thought that was a very neat detail.
Hmm. Black and white was actually the fifth generation.
Yeah, James, I can't believe you're wrong about Pokemon. The other thing that I'm curious to see if they do, one of the things, like Pokemon has a really complicated system of governance. If you like look at like this whole, like there's three companies that all equally own the Pokemon company, but some of those companies also make video games that are then published by the other companies in that, right? Like Game Freak makes a video game, Creatures makes the models and handles the Pokemon, and Nintendo publishes it. And then there's a subsidiary company that does a bunch of other stuff, but also makes some video games. It's kind of a mess. And with Pokemon Champions coming out, and that being a video game that is being designed to be a platform for competitive Pokemon, I wonder if that is moving some of the responsibility of managing competitive Pokemon from Game Freak and putting it into the Pokemon company space of management, so that Game Freak can kind of design things more for just the single player experience. And, you know, right, if there's a move that's way too powerful that like works in the single player experience but like completely breaks competitive, it doesn't, because the video game itself does not need to be where everybody plays the Pokemon competitively, then they can just be like, oh, that move is banned in Champions, but you can still use it in the actual game, and it doesn't feel as weird. I don't know. That maybe that is more complicated, but it just seems like there's opportunity for some of the responsibility to be taken away from Game Freak in such that they can spend more time focusing on a smaller set of things and hopefully make that smaller set of things better and use the power of delegation. I'm curious to see what all of that kind of stuff will look like once both of these games come out. I could be entirely off base, but that is kind of it's more of a thought than even a prediction. It's something that I want to look at once we kind of have a sense of at least the first game and then maybe other games in the future. But the opposite of video games in the future is video games in the past. And the opposite
board
of
games
video games
in
the
distant
future. The opposite of video games in the distant future is video games in the recent past, otherwise known as recent times, that people might have been playing video games. Blue Rider, you told me that you were worried that you weren't going to get to talk about video games because there was a Pokemon Presents, and I am hopefully giving you the opportunity to have those fears assuaged.
I mean, one of the things I want to talk about was Iron Lung, because I watched that.
The video game movie.
Yeah.
That counts.
Yeah.
I will say, as a person out of the loop, my understanding of Iron Lung is it's a horror game, and then Markiplier, YouTuber, played it, and he was like, there should be a movie about this. And then he made a movie about it, and he starred in it, and then it was released in several theaters.
Many theaters.
It was released in our local theater in our town.
I don't know if a thousand theaters would be a lot.
That's a lot,
right?
It was originally gonna be like, I don't know, it was either 10 or 100, but like magnitudes lower than 1,000.
Okay.
It
seems to be critically well received, like maybe kind of within the context of expectations, right? Certainly very good. Like if you were like, okay, let's look at movies made by people who are famous for being YouTubers. Top of
the
line.
I think critically it did pretty middling, actually, but
right, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I really
in the
liked
context
it. As someone
of
who's
YouTuber movies.
Has like no, in the context of one person did a lot of it and then fought for like a couple years to get it treated as a real film and shown in as many theaters as possible across the world is a very good movie. In terms of just, like, a horror movie, I enjoyed it a lot. I think there were issues with it, but, like, it was mostly solid. Actually, one of the issues I had with it was the sound mixing, and apparently that's just the theaters and was not the film itself, so I give it extra makeup points for that one, because that wasn't their fault. Because that's, like, the same thing that happened to Spider-Verse, which is, like, Sony, and they do a lot with, like, audio technology, so if it can happen to them, I don't... Some people thought that it was, like, made up that it was just some theaters, but it does not sound far-fetched to me that if it happened to Sony at a Spider-Man movie, it could happen to one guy who, first time in theaters, and, like, did all of it by himself without, like, a, yeah. So, but, I've never been, like, a Markiplier fan, so I don't have that connection, but, I really loved the game. It's a very solid, short experience that is, it has a fascinating premise, and it uses its time wisely, and it's very singular and focused, and I was really worried when it first got announced that it was going to be a movie, because I was like, that doesn't sound like a good idea, but Markiplier has a good, he made a lot of good choices. He took all the interesting parts about the story and put them in there. He expanded on the things that were worth expanding on without making it lose, like, the cosmic horror edge, which is, like, a very fine line to walk across. And so for a first-time movie, that's, like, really impressive to me. Yeah, I really liked it. For me personally, because it did such a good job with the source material, it's like a 9 out of 10. But, like, critically as just a movie, I'd give it probably closer to, like, a 7.
With 5 being average, of course.
Yeah, it's above average. I've definitely seen worse movies.
I think 7 is labeled good in the game core standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
6 that is above the way average. I'm using it. 5 is average.
Yeah.
For anyone who is watching or listening and not familiar with the game cola rating system.
Mostly it was just I'm good with, like, slow burn horror stuff, but my Hollywood hot takes are: 1, your movie would probably be better if it's shorter, and 2, your movie probably doesn't need a sequel. And that's just my thoughts on most movies these days. So, I thought it could have been shorter.
Yeah, definitely agree on the length.
But it was good, and it, like, it was really pretty, and, like, the way that they found 1,000 ways to add cinematography to the one very small set was impressive, but I would have spent less time on making it pretty, and I cut it down, but it was pretty. The one thing that surprised me was that I think I was, like, the oldest person at the theater, and that was weird for me, because...
That's concerning.
Like, I grew up around the time of Markiplier, and so it felt like he should be, like... It should have been people around my age, maybe a bit older, because... I don't know. But apparently he just has a ton of, like... He has a next gen of fans, and I did not think about that.
Interesting. Yeah, because I would have had the same impression that, like, most of his fan base would have aged with him, but maybe there's still an input somewhere. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Did you play a video game itself, or did you just watch a video game movie?
I played a bunch more of 100 Line Last Defense Academy.
Is that the one with 100 endings?
Yes, I'm about 20 to 30 days into my 31st clear. So
Blue's doing your homework for you, James.
Mm-hmm. It is. I think I've reached the point where I've seen why people have said that the game was like so ambitious and impressive, and they can't talk about their favorite part.
Yeah,
because it does do something that I don't think any other video game has ever seriously attempted before.
Yeah,
and it is really cool.
So you've beaten the first ending, and now you're how far into?
I mean 30 endings so far.
30 endings. Holy cow! Yeah, I've gotten 3.
I see.
I'm too burnt out, and like for me, I need to. I don't know. If I could completely remove the combat from the game, I would probably be more inclined to continue.
That's funny because there are some endings that I would remove. I was like going through them, and they were. There's just one route that it's called the comedy route, and I hope that's the worst route that is in the game because it was a slog to get through. And I wish that there had been more combat to play instead of reading the comedy of an anime game. Which is not to say that the game is never funny anywhere else. It's just that the specifically comedy route is very tropey and upsetting.
Gotcha. I have not seen that one, so...
Well, I think
I'm just imagining every anime trope that's played for laughs that I dislike, and imagining that is sequentially. Is that kind of what the experience is?
Kinda, yeah. It's like, well, I hope I'm done with it because I did. There's like the first decision you get after you beat the first ending, and then that takes you to 2 branches. And I took the top branch, and I did every ending on every branch coming from that.
So oh, it's wow. Like,
I sort of did half of them, except it's going to... The other side's going to branch more and do more stuff.
Yeah, cause there's it's funny. I chose the lower path initially.
Yeah, that's the half that I hear is like better written in general, so... I am looking forward to it.
Well, maybe one of these days I will need to get it started back up and finally see more of this game, because, oh my goodness. Like, it was amazing. It could just be an ADHD thing, again. Like, just that I just started struggling with the combat, with the difficulty by the end of the first... By the first ending, I felt like the difficulty had really ramped up, and you don't, like, have the opportunity to sort of grind if you want, but it feels like it's set up in such a way that it shouldn't be necessary, and I was really starting to struggle.
I didn't grind, and I didn't have an issue, so I got S on all but one fight.
I've gotten S on every fight, but I did have to turn... I had to switch the difficulty to safety for the last couple of battles in the game.
I don't think I did that, so I think it might just be your strategy. I could maybe give you some pointers.
Maybe, but at this point, I'm like, I don't know. I feel like setting it to safety difficulty, it's like, when you're on safety difficulty, at that point, it's kind of like, I don't really want to do these battles, and so I wish I just had, at my own option... the ability to skip them, because when I started the game, the combat was my favorite part, but eventually it started to feel kind of samey.
Well, the good news is that soon you'll be able to skip most battles.
I have been able to skip some battles. It's just I haven't hit enough. Like, I wish I could explain the whole gimmick of the game, because I don't think we've really touched on that, and it's probably going to be very confusing for anyone who hasn't played it. But also, that's kind of the big thing about the game that we don't want to talk about. I don't know. It's such a difficult game to discuss.
It is. But I think, you will soon be able to skip basically every battle. If my experience from the 30 endings has taught me anything.
I mean, if you haven't learned anything after 30 endings, then I would be concerned.
I learned one thing, and it's that with so many endings, not all of them can be good. Direct quote. So I played that. It's going pretty good now that I'm past the worst part, I think. I played Venba. It's a little story-based cooking game. It's like an hour or two long, and it's got a very touching story, and I would recommend that. Earlier this month, I was overcome with the masculine urge to buy all the Life is Strange games and try to play all of them and read all the books and comics and make a big flowchart of what's canon and what contradicts itself and makes it not canon, and because that's the kind of thing I do.
So basically, is that one Pepe Silva meme of just the all the little pieces of string tying the photos.
Yeah, It's Always Sunny.
Yep, that is the type of game series I like to play.
So is that, how's that coming along?
I mean, I was doing the first game, and then my PC died, and then I was like, take a break from that, I guess.
It's a sign.
No. If anything, it's a sign to move away from Windows as soon as possible, because it was, like, bothering me to update it, and I was like, okay, fine.
It's like, well,
and then, and now all these new updates break
things.
And then
it died immediately.
Yeah.
You drop your computer out of a window, of course it's going to break.
Wow.
You got to move away from Windows.
Yeah, I've switched to Linux almost completely about a year or so ago, and it's been, like, there's still some adjustments I have to get used to, but aside from a couple of games, I have been able to fully switch over to Linux, and it's been a good time.
Hooray.
Yay! But that's I didn't mean to make this started... about me.
How dare you speak when I am speaking. Today I started Inscription, and that's going to be a whole thing of its own, too.
Oh, is that the card game type thing?
It's the horror card roguelike from the guy who made, Pony Island and The Hex and other stuff. And he's got a style about him, a thing. He has things he likes to do, and that's on full display in this game. And so it's going to be all of the Life is Strange games, but in one game, basically. So that'll be fun to solve, and I think that is it. What have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of a Minecraft mod pack called Stoneblock 4, which I don't know.
The first three.
They existed. I am just happened to be playing the fourth one.
That's crazy.
So it is numbered that way because there were three prior entries. But this one is a little bit more ambitious, in that it has, actual sort of, lore and plot. It even has voice acting, which is crazy for a Minecraft mod pack. That's a lot of effort put into sort of curating it and setting it up. I don't know, are either of you, are, well, I guess I should make sure, are both of you on the same page? You, do you know what a sky block is in Minecraft?
Yes, but you should probably explain it for the audience.
That's true.
Who does not know, which may include Blue.
Yeah.
I know.
So, for those who don't know, a sky block was basically just a specialized map or a world file that you could download for Minecraft since pretty early on. Which was basically you are in a world that is just a complete void. There's nothing there except for a single small island with some grass, a tree, and a chest on it containing a bucket of water and a bucket of lava, as well as some seeds. And the goal of the world was to, I think the initial post on like the Minecraft forums or whatever of the person that created it was saying, hey, your goals are to, you know, build a mob farm from which you can get some resources like mob drops, build a proper, like, you know, crop farm through which you can sustain yourself, you know, get a certain number of wood, and just basically accomplish a couple of like arbitrary goals. Because the important thing is that because you is that you're given everything to become self-sufficient. The lava and water can be used to make what's called a cobblestone generator, which is basically a structure in the world that you can set up that will infinitely generate cobblestone, which you can then mine and build out this sort of island into a bunch of cobblestone platforms. You can build out as you need to, but you are limited in terms of how much wood and how much grass and dirt you have to plant farmland on, and you have to you know, wait for trees to grow in order to get more wood, which is used for crafting tools and other important things. So, Stone Block is a mod pack based on the concept of sort of flipping this idea on its head, and instead of putting you in a world floating in the sky, you are encased in a world completely made of stone. There is no surface. It is all just stone. And then it includes mods and other such stuff that you can not only just sort of build out a room and maybe grow a few crops, but that you can actually start to generate a lot of other common resources through various means. And eventually you'll be able to automate those. So basically you can, once again, your goal is to become self-sufficient, survive, and thrive, basically starting from nothing. And so it's got this big, long quest line of you're basically trying to restore the world to its proper state because something cosmically has gone very wrong. And in order to do so, you need to rebuild what's called the World Engine, which is this giant, huge structure in a separate part of the world that you teleport to after you complete various challenges, after you build certain blocks, or after you craft certain materials. You then bring it back to the World Engine to help rebuild in sort of a big, long quest line. And it's been pretty addictive so far. I've been playing it a whole lot. I think I'm about halfway through the pack in terms of quest, in terms of main quest progression, but I'm taking some time now to sort of refine my base, rebuild a couple of things, and sort of get a better setup going on. So, and that's the primary game I've been playing for the last month.
Neat. How'd you find out about it?
Just, I follow some creators who play Minecraft on YouTube, and so generally when sort of a new really popular pack comes out, or just an interesting looking pack, and I see them playing it, or I see it being talked about online, I'll look into it. I'll usually watch one of my preferred creators playing it for a while to see if it looks like a gameplay I would mesh with. Then I usually try it out myself. And so far, it's been a good way to go. It's worked for me.
Well, folks, you'll never believe it, because I've played 2 video games in recent times.
No, you haven't. I don't believe you.
My prediction was correct. Okay, the first one I want to talk about is Kirby Nightmare in Dreamland, which, ooh, I played on the actual Game Boy Advance hardware, specifically the Game Boy Advance SP. Kirby Nightmare in Dreamland is a Kirby game that is a remake of Kirby's Adventure, but with updated graphics, and I assume like it's probably rebuilt from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
I did not enjoy my time with this video game.
What? Oh, that was one of my favorite games growing up.
Kirby is... This is the... Because I've also played Kirby's Adventure. And it's the vibe... I could have a lot of thoughts about this. The vibe for me is... It's like you imagine like a child doing something poorly. And you're like, oh, but that's cute because you're a kid. And then you see an adult doing that same thing, and you're like, no, that actually makes me feel bad now. You should. And seeing the flaws with Kirby's Adventure that were more understandable when Kirby as a series was so new, represented in what is like the beginning of an art style that well lasted past Kirby's Nightmare in Dreamland, makes a lot of those issues feel worse to me. I think that is a seed of what's underlying my feelings about this game a bit.
What flaws are you referring to when you say these flaws that you see in the original Kirby's Adventure?
The abilities are so much more limited than what you expect in what I've experienced in Kirby games. And even I feel like compared to like Kirby Superstar, they're just like every single ability basically just does one thing, and that's pretty much it. There's very few abilities that have extra effects on the world. Even there's a lot of abilities that feel redundant because they got combined and then they ended up being combined into one ability in later games. Like there's fire and burn. But also, when I was playing it, I had the distinct impression that the animations did not line up with what was happening both in my favor and out of my favor. Obviously, it felt worse when it was like, I thought I hit that enemy and I could see the fire touch the enemy, but I guess it wasn't actually in the hitbox, even though this being is encased in flames. But there were also plenty of times where, like, I felt like I got completely hit by an enemy and I didn't take any damage. And, like, that felt weird and bad. Like, I felt like I should have gotten hit. Hmm. There were places in the game where enemies just, like, zoom in from, like, nowhere and hit you. You know, so much of the game is just run forward. And then all of a sudden it's like, ah, except now. So now you have to walk slowly because in 10% of the time I could throw an enemy at you for running too fast. But for most of the game, just going pretty quickly and just running through things is actually optimal because it's, you know, Kirby games are easier. It doesn't really, like, the secrets in the game just feel really lackluster to me. They're not really structured in an interesting way. The rewards you get for doing the secrets are never, like, I'm doing them because I want to get 100%, but, like, I open up the bonus minigame and I'm like, oh, cool, there's a bonus minigame. And then the lives system, the way the game works is just, this is, if it copies from Kirby's Adventure, fine, they should have changed it. If you close the game and open it back up, your lives are reset. And so many of the minigames are about getting extra lives. And so there's no reason to do any of the mini games because unless you're going to try to beat the game in one whole long sitting, you're just going to lose all those extra lives whenever you stop playing. It also messes with the structure of what they're trying to do because one of the ways that the game is structured is that you don't get your health back at the end of a level. The idea being that, like, oh, if you just barely survive a boss, then, like, you still have to, like, figure out how to get your health back. You can't just use ending a level to refill. Except... you could just turn the game off and turn it back on and get all your health back. And the Game Boy Advance can save your state.
Yeah,
it can save a number of lives in your current health.
Yeah,
it is not
that's
the capabilities of the system.
That's very dull. Even the NES had room to save the number of lives. It's one number.
Yeah.
Like I've never understood that, and I will agree with you that that's dumb and should have been changed. Though that being said, I will need to go back and replay this game because I loved Kirby's Nightmare in Dream Land. I played that all the time on my GBA when I was younger, and I really, really liked the game. And I think part of it is I have never fully played through Superstar. I really haven't gotten far in Superstar. And so to me, it was those abilities, the more complex stuff in Superstar, that felt foreign and alien and weird to me and so much more complex, because I was used to playing Kirby with the style of the power-ups do one, you know, do one thing. And so you have to decide which power-up you like the most, and then you try and keep it for as long as you can. But not every power-up is applicable in every situation, and sometimes the game, to help find a secret, requires you to get a specific power-up that will do the thing that it needs you to do. And so when I tried playing Superstar, I was like, oh, this is different, and I'm not sure how much I like it. And admittedly, like I said, I didn't get too far into the game, but I was actually more of the impression that more Kirby games were like the simple power-ups rather than the way that Superstar works. And so I guess I went into it was with the feeling of, this is already what I expect from a Kirby game, and so I wasn't like disappointed or feel like something had been lost as a result.
Yeah, I mean, like, the best part of the game is how it looks. I mean, it's very obvious, and it was right that the art style that they put in this video game basically is how Kirby looks until Return to Dreamland, where they go in on 3D instead.
Yeah.
Like, this was the 2D Kirby look for so long. And, like, that's kind of not the fault of the game, but in terms of, like, is it worth to play it now? It's like, yes, it was like, it deserves credit for being the most innovative, but the other games also get to build off of that. And so it's no longer a unique characteristic to the game in terms of your experience with it. And I don't know, like, the flow of the abilities, like, other Kirby games, I feel like, have a better flow of how they introduce the abilities and how that interacts with how you play each of the levels, right? There's more of a structure of like, hey, we're introducing these abilities here because we expect that you will, like, picking one of these will give you an interesting time with what's ahead. And I did not get that feeling most of the time playing the game, because usually when I play a Kirby game for the first time, I kind of just take in new abilities as they're presented. There's a hard mode, which is just play the video game again, but with two less health points. Which is also something that I just don't like in general. And that time I was like, okay, I'm going to get the electric ability, because you can just kind of run and press the button and destroy everything around you. And then you can go back afterward and go collect all of the collectibles with the extra, go get hammer, because hammer is the solution to most of the puzzles.
Or fire and then running.
Fire and then running. And they do fire and running better in a lot of other Kirby games. There's one fire and running section where it's, again, I get it's supposed to be a challenge. It's near the end of the game, right, where you go to a cannon and you have to go to all these other things. But they're just throwing enemies at you, and it's not consistent in how it's done. Like, I don't know what the rules are, but they're, like, literally falling out of the sky and moving is really fast. And they just run into you, and then you, and again, like, it could be a challenge, but it's not consistent enough for it to feel like trial and error gets it through you, and it doesn't feel like you're really given enough to work with to actually deal with it. The other thing is that so many abilities, I have a lot to say about this, so many abilities, right, and you can see how, like, in an individual case, right, the cost being, hey, this ability takes a little time to start up, so you have to prepare for that. Fine. But it felt like that was every ability. There was no ability where it's like, hey, this is maybe weaker, maybe less versatile, but you get it instantly. And so it just made everything, your response to things feel so slow, because it just felt like there was a lead up to every single attacking action, which doesn't mesh well when they're trying to throw higher reaction stuff at you. And again, it wasn't necessarily too hard. It just wasn't fun to deal with. The way that you had to, like, work with the systems was just not fun. I didn't like that challenge. There's some other minor things, like, I really liked it when the boss rush gauntlet was about, hey, we're going to give you like random opportunities to switch your ability through it so that you can try to like find your way. No, in this one, it's like you basically go through a sequence of the abilities that you can steal from the bosses. And then there are certain bosses where you need a certain ability, or maybe you don't need it, but it's like very clearly designed for it. Like the fighting Krakow, you have to get high jump, mm-hmm. basically. I don't know. Maybe there's a way that you can, there's like this sequence where you use high jump to just jump up for like a minute. And maybe there's a way around it, but when I tried to do it without high jump, the guy just ran into me. So it's like, okay, so you're forcing me to switch it to this ability every single time. It's always the same. If you're going to let me make me a Swiss Army hero with a bunch of different powers, and then you're going to offer me a challenge where that doesn't do anything. The boss is way easier than any of the levels, right? I don't mind if a Kirby game is easy. I get it. But the bosses should not be the easiest part of the game, right? The boss gauntlet is only hard because you're not given much health to deal with. And some of the bosses can more consistently, but like most of the time you have a full bar of health when you're playing them in the actual game. And so like you get hit once or twice and it's not a big deal. Wispy Woods, if you have any ability, you just press the ability button and then Wispy Woods dies. Like there are plenty of other versions of Wispy Woods where like you do actually have to at least move out of the way of an apple that falls. It just felt so unbalanced. I did not like it. I played it because I wanted to like get the full experience and be thorough in my opinion of it, but I did not really like it very much. A video game that I played that I did like, Advance Wars 2, which I talked about before on the last podcast, but I hadn't done enough. I completed the hard campaign, which I wanted to wait a bit to do. After completing the standard campaign mode, Advance Wars is a tactics battle shooter. It's kind of like Fire Emblem, except it's military, like kind of late 90s, early 2000s military based. And your units are expendable is the other thing. They're generic and expendable. So it's not about like, oh, well, if any single unit dies, I have to restart the level or my game is irrevocably going to be worse. And so I did that and I had a good time. They really nailed the balance of it. It is also narratively very interesting how they dance around the fact that like this is war and people are supposed to be dying, but that's not like the tone of the video game at all. But sometimes it kind of like jarringly like hits that just inevitably because of this war-based framing. It's kind of morbidly funny in the sense of like, I know that they're not actually making light of the situation so much as like, this is just the setup and the setup naturally leads to this weird dissonance. Not even the classic video game Ludo narrative dissonance, right? Because like when you're actually playing the game, it's not really that strong. It's just like the characters talking to each other are like super chummy and super positive. You feel like you guys are talking about like sending people to die technically. And that's not the vibe that I'm getting from the tone at all. And I don't think it should be. So now I'm going through the challenge maps again with the extra characters that make it easier to get S rank because they're broken. But some of those levels, man, like they're easy to beat with the broken characters, but a lot of them are pretty tricky to S rank because, I mean, your opponent is just so outclasses you. And the easiest, like what you can do is you can kind of overwhelm them with numbers, but you're penalized for like speed. Like if you don't go fast enough, you lose points. If you lose units, you lose points. And then there's power is another market, which is like what based on the maximum number of enemies you take out in one turn, which feels weird. It feels like it should be because you can kind of rig it because you can just it's a, the technique is a ratio of how many units you lose versus how many units you build, which I think is supposed to help it scale based on like the particular map. If it's like a smaller map or a larger map, but it makes it easy to get because like once you're about to win, you just start building a bunch of units, like cheap units every single turn just to like boost your number. So I don't know. I might not get S rank. I got A rank, at least A rank on everything. I might not get S rank on everything just because some of these are like really long and it gets a little bit closer to being like a puzzle with a solution, where you really have to game your understanding of the AI as opposed to kind of like the general strategy of the system. Like you have to play it over and over again and see, okay, well, it always responds the exact same way every time I do this, even though that wouldn't necessarily, and now I'm taking advantage of it and it's not changing its strategy. It kind of like loses the charm a bit when you realize like how much of it is scripted versus like other times where it's scripted, but in a way that feels like the natural best thing to do. And if you're not explicitly taking advantage of it, it doesn't feel so much like it's following a script as much as it's just making good decisions on the fly. And they're getting too long. It's too long to get there and be like, oh, nope, you didn't quite get enough points. So I might tap out at the end here. But there's a reason it's stuck around in the public consciousness for so long. And it's interesting to me that it doesn't seem like anybody's really been able to get a solid grasp of some kind of successor to it. A lot of tried. I played Wargroove a bit back, and like it had some elements, but didn't quite scratch the same itch. And then I don't quite know why or how. Anyway, I talked for a long time about video games.
But it was a good game.
It was a good game. I would definitely recommend it if you have the opportunity to play it.
And you played the original GBA version? Did you play like the reboot camp or whatever?
No, this is the original GBA version.
Okay.
I think that's enough video games for this, the 100s of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's been quite a ride here in the 100s. For me, I've done this is, well over 100 podcasts that I've been in charge of. But with 200 coming along, it's not passing without a celebration. Because as you may have done the mental math in your heads, folks, the 200th podcast is scheduled for April. And the other thing that happens in April is Game Cola's anniversary. And this so happens to be Game Cola's 24th anniversary. And so the idea for Podcast 200, Paul has suggested this before, and I have taken his bad idea, and we're going to do it. We are doing a live, continuous, 24-hour live stream podcast to celebrate Podcast 200. This will be released. We will be doing this on April 22nd, Game Cola's birthday. It's also Earth Day, if that helps you remember.
Game Cola's birthday on Earth Day.
It's a Wednesday. We are going to have 24 individual hours scheduled. It's all going to be in sequence starting at midnight Eastern time, because that's based on Game Cola. Game Cola was created Eastern time, and that's my justification for it. You can't argue with me about it. I will give more details. So we're not going to do a podcast 200 on the first Monday in April. Instead, I will put out an episode, quote unquote, on the feed, explaining the plan, giving you all the information you need to know to properly experience episode 200. We'll have a few more of the details worked out. We're planning ahead for this one. But if you are interested in helping, talking about designing this, you want to make sure that you don't miss anything, you can find us on the Game Cola Discord. If you're watching on YouTube, there's a link in the video description. If you go to the website, gamecola.net, you can find a link to the Discord in the various social media bits. You can follow me on Blue Sky and, ask me questions there. I'm joseph.martin on Blue Sky. But yeah, I'm very excited about this. We're going to have everybody doing it. We're going to get as many guests, Game Cola guests, as we can. If we can make it work, we'll have a fan hour if you're interested in something like that. But yeah, anything you guys want to say about Podcast 200?
I'm very excited.
That's so many.
That is a lot.
I started with Podcast 101, and to think that I would be going on for podcasts, for 99 more podcasts, me when I started this would never have believed would have kept going for this long, or that this would have kept going for this long. But you know what? Heck yeah! Here's to another 100.
This, mm-hmm. And another this, 24.
Yeah,
that's 197 more than there are cat presidents. But you should buy all of the ones there are.
Yes, that too. I'm pretty sure we're going to get Paul. And so I will make him talk about Cat President 3.
I really hope so.
Oh, sorry. Cat President 3'd rate candidate.
Dating date.
In the meantime, thank you for listening to this and all other 198 numbered episodes. we can wishwash on the how many there actually are, but numbered episodes of the Game Cola podcast. Have a wonderful time of day, wherever it is, whenever it is you're listening to this podcast, and we will see you in the live stream for podcast 200. See you there. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. As soon as you start saying the sort of outro bit, I can just mentally hear the outro music playing do do do, cuz whenever I'm in the car I always jam out to it. Do 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 do